the sellers actually said, like, I want to sell to him, make him buy this. Like, doesn't matter. I mean, within reason, right? The price, but like they were willing to take less than somebody else because they liked him so much.
Hi, folks. It's the Quiet Light Podcast with Joe Valley and Mark Dast. Quiet Light Brokerage is the leader in helping entrepreneurs build, buy, and sell their online businesses. Since 2007, we have helped thousands buy and sell online businesses. And now, we're putting our extensive knowledge in your earbuds with our trademark relentless honesty and a few laughs along the way.
The problem we're trying to solve is that there are rich teams and there are poor teams. Then there's 50 feet of crap, and then there's us. It's an unfair game.
And now, here's Joe and Mark.
Joe, one of my favorite things about working within Quiet Light is some of the camaraderie that we have with each other. The fact that we get to tease each other a little bit, egg each other on, but also help each other out, talk about deals, collaborate on our transactions. Because everybody at Quiet Light has so much entrepreneurial experience that it's like having this built-in board of advisors for every single thing that we do. And one thing I think you and I need to do a better job of, I know we've had each of the advisors on Quiet Light, the Quiet Light podcast, but I think we need to bring them on a bit more so that others can enjoy some of the experience that they have. You had Chuck on recently and grilled him a little bit in this episode.
I did. You know, I want people to get to know Chuck for the fun, experienced entrepreneur that he is. And so I mixed it up a little bit. I had some fun with him. We did some rapid fire questions. I intentionally, just let me get this up front and out there for the audience. I intentionally mispronounced somebody's name. I butchered it intentionally again. I did it 7 or 8 episodes ago, and I got some emails saying, I think the person you're trying to find is so-and-so. I did it again. And
same person?
Same person, yeah. If he's listening.
He needs to start listening to the podcast, I'm telling you.
Yeah. He does, especially my episodes, because, you know, frankly, I've got a leg up on you.
Yes, you do. You have overtaken me for the most popular episode on the Quiet Life podcast. I will overcome that because I've got some great ones planned coming in here soon. Chuck is a fascinating individual. I've known Chuck for a long time, and he is really, really smart when it comes to his entrepreneurial acumen. It's almost annoying, to be honest, because, you know, with the model that we have at Quiet Light Brokerage, we don't have employees, right? No one's an employee of Quiet Light Brokerage. We have a lot of entrepreneurs who work together in sort of a collective group. Well, one of the benefits to that is all the advice and feedback I'm able to get from people. And one of the most annoying things is all the feedback and advice I get from everyone. You know, and sometimes
from Chuck especially. Chuck is so thorough. What's the term? He gives to himself, whatever it is. He hyper focuses on the most minute little detail. And I fear asking questions sometimes because of the level of detail that he's going to give to me in terms of what I have to fix and correct in a document that I'm creating.
But it's, you know, at the end of the day, even though sometimes it can be overwhelming, like, oh, come on, you think I'm doing everything wrong, evidently, because I keep getting this feedback. It's always on point. And I don't think I've ever received feedback from him where I look at it and say, this is not worth considering. We're looking at. So smart guy. I'm looking forward. What are some of the things that you discussed in this episode?
Well, we talked about some of, you know, he's got almost 3 years brokering now and over 20 years as an entrepreneur now. And he talked about some of his experiences, the pros and cons of being an entrepreneur, some of the things that he's found that certain buyers do better than anyone else, and how he wants new buyers to adopt that style. And then the biggest mistakes that someone selling their business can make as well. And it's fascinating. As I just said, he's got 20 plus years as an entrepreneur. I'm in the same boat. You're in the same boat. So collectively, the team at Quiet Light, I'd say what, 250 years of entrepreneurial experience that we share with our team, with our clients. And I think it's fascinating. Chuck is just tip of the iceberg here in terms of the experience. So it's exciting to share this with him. And we had a lot of fun. So that's the key in this one.
Oh, fantastic. Well, let's get to it.
Hey, folks, it's Joe Valley from Quiet Light Brokerage on the Quiet Light Podcast. And today we have the most special guest. His name is
Chucky. No, that's not what we call him. It's Chuck III is his personal email address. I'm not going to tell you at what. You can all hound him now anyway. You know his email address. It's Chuck at Quiet Light Brokerage. Chuck Mullins, welcome back to the Quiet Light Podcast.
Thank you, sir. Thank you. And if we're going to get specific, it's actually Charles Clifford Mullins III.
That's way too much. And I, you know, I'm from New England. I can't talk with a British accent. Something about us. Right.
Well, I can't either.
All right. Hey, well, listen, you know the routine. Normally on the podcast, we ask people to give their own background, who they are, what they're all about, so that, you know, we're not sounding like we're reading from a script, which we don't. We wing these things. You know that. Our audience knows that. But before we get into that, I want to ask you a series of rapid fire questions. The first one, so that people understand and establish your experience here at Quiet Light Brokerage. How long have you been brokering at Quiet Light Brokerage?
About 2.5, almost 3 years.
Almost 3 years. Okay. So let's start with, I've got a total of 6 questions. Number one, and you got to give me a quick answer. Number one, who's your favorite broker?
Joe Valley.
There you go. Good, good, good. All right. If you were stranded on an island with me, Brad Whalen and Jason Yellowitz, and a raft floated by that would only carry 3 of us, there's 4 altogether, who would you leave behind and why?
Jason Yellowitz, because he would be able to burn his stacks of cash to stay warm.
And he carries it with him? Is that what you're saying?
I think he's got money now.
Jason, I know you don't listen to the podcast, so everybody make fun of Jason. That's our job here. All right. This is a really important question. Who's the better podcaster, me or Andy Yodaranan? I mean, Andrew Yodarian.
I would have to go with Mark.
You are way
too low. Isn't it you that people come up to the booth and ask for? Or is it Mark they come up and ask for?
It's me. It's me. Mark doesn't go to booths. All right. Did you know Walker Dibble wrote a book and a best-selling book?
Have you heard about the second book that he wrote?
No. He wrote a second book?
Yes. If you go to walkerdibble.guru, you can check out the second one that hasn't been released yet.
Okay. Walker All right. Dibble. So this is a tough question. Guru. This is not a trick question. I want to know if you can answer this one. What's the name of Walker's book?
Buy then build.
No, oh, you got it. You got it. Okay.
How can you not get it? It's a topic of every conversation, every conference I go to. There's these free books that are just floating around that conference, and I'm like, wait a second, how did that get there?
And it's the bottom of every one of his email signatures. One of these days, we're going to dig way back into the archives when he was actually an actor and find a clip, and we're going to change his email signature line somehow, some way. All right. So as you know, historically, Quiet Light Brokerage does not recruit brokers. I have conversations 3 or 4 times a week these days with people who want to join the team, but we, you know, for the most part, don't recruit. We have, as you know, or Mark has, as you know, recruited a few, starting with Amanda back in the day. She was the first. And I think Brad was also recruited, and yourself was also recruited. Of all of the brokers that Mark recruited, last question, by the way, what was his best decision?
Probably Brad. He's been killing it, man.
Man, give yourself some credit, Chuck. Come on. anybody but you would probably be the politically correct answer, but essentially you just threw Amanda under the bus. But fortunately, Amanda doesn't really listen to our own podcast either. All right. Enough of this nonsense. Let's talk about you and your experience. You know, I know all about you, but for the audience members, Chuck has been on the podcast before. Mark had him on when he first joined the team 3 years ago. And the focus of that podcast was a tiny little bit about Chuck, but mostly about Chuck's due diligence experience. And I think you had a list of, was it 25 due diligence tools?
Who can remember?
Yeah, a lot. And it's all, if you Google Quiet Light Podcast, Chuck Mullins, due diligence, you'll find it. It'll be at the top of the Google search engine. And it's great stuff. And I learned a lot when I did it. But honestly, I refer most people out for due diligence, buyers that is, to our friend Chris Yates at Centurica. They do a great job. But let's talk a little bit about who you are and your life experience and a little bit of your brokering experience now that you're 3 years into Quiet Light. So who the heck are you? Tell us about your entrepreneurial experience. I know that you started way back when you were in college, right?
Yeah, I graduated high school in 96, and I'd always wanted a computer, but we couldn't afford one. So finally, for college, needed a computer. So I got a computer and started a free website on, it's like Angel Fire or Tripod or one of these things way back in 96. And I remember, you know, just putting up some content. I had it as an online library for college students. And I remember somebody offering me like 10 bucks at some point to put like a link on my website. It's like $10. Awesome. Like, you know, I'm making money. And then somebody offers me like $100. I'm like, what? $100. So then I was, this is before I even had a domain, right? So it was like, you know, angelfire.com/blah, blah, blah. I started thinking about, okay, I'm going to buy a domain. And back then they were like $35. I was talking to my mom, like, oh, I'm going to buy a domain. And she's like, you're crazy. You shouldn't buy, you know, like you're wasting your money. And why are you spending all this time in front of the computer? And then it just started growing, you know, and then somebody offered me $1,000. And before you know it, I was making about 16 grand a month off of advertising back in the 90s.
In college, right?
In college, yeah. And so I was
a lot of Jägermeister.
And the internet bubble ended up bursting in like the 2000, 2001, and all that money like dried up overnight. So I was like, okay, now what? So I had to figure out how to pivot. And myself and two other guys, we had different businesses. We all pulled together and started a membership site. And like the first month with that membership site, we made like 60 grand. And it was just like mind blowing. Like, oh my God, you know, we're in college. I didn't have keggers. I had like full bottle, you know, like full bar parties.
Everybody wanted to be your friend, right?
It was fun. And we'd stay at like the Ritz-Carlton for Mardi Gras and like just do crazy things. We rented like a ski chalet, it was like a 15 bedroom house on the slopes. And I forget where it was, but and brought all of like, we had affiliates at that time, brought all our affiliates to come and ski with us. And so we had a great time. And, you know, at some point I was making a lot of money and didn't really know what to do with it all. I was definitely wasting my fair share of it. Actually, and kind of going back, my mom, the whole thing with her telling me I shouldn't start the business and this and that. In 2003, I think it was, I bought my mom and sister cars for Christmas.
I wrote that down when you said that because I knew that you told me the story about, you know, Christmas and your mom went outside and there was a big big ribbon on a brand new car. I bet she's happy you bought that domain name after all, wasn't she?
Yeah, for sure. And I don't usually tell that story, so maybe we'll have to edit that out.
No editing. It's a good story.
Actually, take care of your mother.
That's the right thing to do.
I made two giant boxes and I handed my mom like a box with some keys and she sees them and they had a Lincoln in it, which I had a Navigator at the time. And she's like, oh, it's a scavenger hunt. He put his keys in here. And she walks outside and sees this giant box. It's just like, my mom doesn't curse. And she goes, oh shit. And runs outside and gets ready to tear into the box. And I said, wait, mom, hold on. Like there's a card on there. You've taught me better. Open the card. Yeah. So she opens it and it says, to my sister, and my mom's like, to my sister. And my mom's like, or my sister's like, to me. And I'm like, yeah. And I wiggle the keys in front of my sister's face and she's like, what? So she runs and dives in. And my mom looks at me like with this, like WTF. And I'm like, you're over there. And then she starts walking and then sees it like buried on the other side of the house in a big box and like, you know, runs over and dives in. And we're in Georgia at the time at a family house and it was cold and she didn't have shoes on. And it was a great time. I've got the video. One day I'll have to share with somebody, but I don't know that I want to share it.
what a great experience and a great thing to do, you know, for your mother and for your sister. Did your mother get the nicer car or was it equal to both?
I was actually going to buy them the exact same car. And then I was talking to my sister, trying to like make sure that it was the kind that she would want. And I said, well, what do you think mom would like? And she said, well, my favorite car is a Sequoia. Smart so I ended guy. Up, I got my mom a Lincoln Aviator, my mom a Sequoia. They're about the same price. I think my sister's a little more. Yeah. I did get some grief about that. Also, the night before, or a couple nights before, we went to Walmart and I bought every single piece of cheesy add-on part you could get and added it to the car. So I got like a fuzzy steering wheel cover, dice, the little light up things that go on the rims, and just totally like made the car look as ridiculous as possible and told them in order to get it, they'd have to drive it with that stuff on it.
That's hilarious. So for anybody that's listening instead of watching, if you look at my chin and Chuck's chin, you'll see some gray there, probably a little more on mine than his, of course. His is more on his cheek. Mine's dead on center of my chin. That's because of age and life experience. So you had some amazing times, Chuck, out of college, making more money in a month than most people in this country do in a year, all web-based business experience. It's not always wonderful, though, is it?
No, not absolutely not. Yeah, I've entrepreneurship's is ups and downs. We've gotten hit by Google so many times, I couldn't even tell you. And most of them were just algorithmic. But I have on one of my big businesses, we had about 12 that were all doing the same thing. And one of my partners had used the same email address in our Webmaster Tools account. And somebody from the spam team, I guess, noticed and went in and just manually penalized all of our businesses, I think except for two, because those were the only two that didn't have those email addresses.
Wow.
And that, like, just overnight, right? Like, poof, gone. And it's just like, oh, it's heartbreaking. Yeah. At least when it's the algorithmic type of penalties, like, it's easy to kind of, well, maybe not easy, right? But you can recover from that. The manual penalties, we hired somebody who used to work in the spam team. You know, they told us what to do. We did it. We just haven't been able to recover from that on those other sites.
Yeah, no, it's always hard. Google algorithm updates, I think are getting a little better, a little easier to handle and manage. I think ultimately, I always used to say this, actually, if you do the right thing, the way, you know, Google tells you to do it, ultimately, it's not going to hurt you, the algorithm updates. And I guarantee there are people out there shaking their head no right now, because a good friend of mine, he built a great business, great, great content site, sold it. And there was an update recently, and the buyer, another great entrepreneur, bought it and did have some negative impact. What they both know is that sometimes when Google casts a wide net, some of the wrong sites get caught up in it. And over time, that does get corrected, but it does sting initially, doesn't it?
Yeah. And I will say, like, the reason we got caught up in a lot of the updates wasn't because we were doing the things that Google tells you to do, right? We were gaming the system, and we deservedly got caught for doing those things. And we would adjust our technique and then, you know, regain. So, like, one of our sites had like 100,000 pieces of unique content, yet we were in Google index for like 13 million pages.
Wow.
So, like, how does one do that?
How does one do that? Good Lord.
Trickery. Really.
Well, the gray in your chin has matured you to the point that I think you're beyond the trickery, because you look at the long-term cash flow and benefits of owning an online business now. It's not just quick cash anymore. At least that's the way I look at it. You too?
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, you're talking about like the algorithm updates, and I feel like there's been so many and that most of the really garbage sites have probably gotten taken out by now. I feel like, and maybe I'm wrong, but now it's more of like just tweaking the knobs a little bit. So unless you're in one of these like fringe business models, I tend to believe, and I could be 100% wrong, but I tend to believe that most of the major algorithm updates have been, you know, already done, you know, and then now they're going after, I guess, like medical websites and things like that. So
Yeah. The updates are far further and fewer in between, and in many cases, not as severe. All right. So I'm going to throw a question at you. I don't know if I've told you this story or not, or if you've heard it. Some of the audience members might have heard it. So I'm going to just test your algorithm update knowledge. And if you answer within 2 seconds, then I know you heard the story. So I bought a business. I sold my business in November 2010, yada, yada, yada. People have heard this a million times, or at least hundreds of thousands of times if they've listened to every episode and keep downloading everything. No, we haven't done 100,000 episodes. That's totally inaccurate. I can't do math, by the way, apparently. All right. So I bought a content site. I sold a great site. The content was amazing. And then I bought a piece of junk. I had 42 amazing days. I bought it March 1st, 2012. I had maybe 3 or 4 keywords on the first page of Google. And then boom, they fell to the bottom of page one and then page two, and they were gone. And I lost over $250,000 in the course of 12 months. What happened? What algorithm update was that? It was, again, I bought it March 1st, 2012. I had 42 amazing days.
Panda. Penguin.
Penguin. All right. You're close. We're going to have to throw that quiz out there. Everybody in the audience, we're going to throw that quiz out there for a prize. Chuck's wearing a beautiful Quiet Light Brokerage. Is that a polo shirt? Polo shirt? Maybe we need to get some of those packaged up and give away prizes for that kind of stuff. All right. Let's jump on to your Quiet Light Brokerage life, your entrepreneurial life. amazing ups and downs, a lot of great ups, and he did some good things for family and friends. The downs, we learn from them, and we try to take those lessons and make sure that we are really bringing great listings to market so the buyers are making good, safe investments, and the sellers of those investments can move on with peace of mind to their next adventures, whether that's another business or retirement. In your history transactions here at Quiet Light, is there any particular niche that you gravitate towards and enjoy more than another? Because you, as you said, a ton of content and affiliate experience, but I think some of your larger deals have been physical product e-commerce sites. But is there anything that stands out for you?
Yeah, I mean, so my heart is in like membership sites. I love recurring revenue. I think everybody does. And that's why the multiples are higher, right? Because of that that recurring revenue and the predictability. So I would say that that's kind of where I like to be. But my biggest sales have been around physical products, you know, an outdoor sporting equipment one that was great. One that I really loved that sold, I don't know, like 6 months ago, was a company that did custom tailored suits. That thing, it's like awesome. Who doesn't want to say they, you know, like have a business that sells custom tailored suits? Like, it's just, I think it's got the cool factor.
You know, that's the amazing thing about what you do, what we do at Quiet Light, is that we come to this role with a lifetime of experience that I was talking with Walker Brad about this recently, that we didn't know it, but all of our entrepreneurial life was preparing us for this role. And now we get to experience so many cool different business models. You know, you come to this role with a ton of membership experience, but custom tailored suits, and you're like, that's the coolest thing. Who doesn't want to say they own a custom tailored suit business? I need to buy a custom tailored suit. I know who bought it, and you're going to, I can reach out to him. I know who he is too. Speaking of that, I do want to ask a random question, although its timing is not very random. And you have to answer this. There's only one answer to this. This buyer listens to the podcast and he comments and he tells us about it. Sometimes he's riding his bike. So do you have a favorite audience member that also happens to be a buyer? Yes or no? You have to say yes, and you have to say his name now because he's
Sure. Mike Nunez.
There you go. Mike Nunez. This is just a shout out to you. Thanks for listening, Mike.
Well, and I'll tell you, it shouldn't just be a shout out to him. If anybody wants to know how to be a good buyer and how to buy businesses, they should talk to Mike Nunez, because he is 100% the absolute best buyer I have. And not like just in the sense of like the actual acquisition of the company, but like when he gets on a phone call and talks to the buyer or to the sellers, he makes them feel like they are the only person in the world, the most important person. Like, he is just so smooth, and he's not doing it as like a ploy or a gimmick. Like, he's just a nice guy, and he really like appreciates these people and the businesses they've created. And it's just, he's really good on a call.
It's the unknown secret that we tell all the time to buyers. Look, when it's a great business, it's a great opportunity. There are going to be multiple buyers, and it's not always the most money or the most cash that gets the letter of intent. In some cases, it's the buyer that the seller likes the most. And being likable on those conference calls is critically important. And apparently Mike does it very well.
And one of my businesses, actually, I think two of them that Mike purchased, the sellers actually said, like, I want to sell to him, make him buy this. Like, doesn't matter. I mean, within reason, right? The price, but like they were willing to take less than somebody else, because they liked him so much.
Oh boy. Now, if Mike's listening and he paid full price, now he's going to be like, what?
That is the problem. Because of course I did make him pay more than the other people, but they were willing to take less. And what's funny is one of my sellers told him as much. Oh, like I would have taken less from you. And I'm like, don't say that.
In his heart, he was willing to take less, but his checkbook in his head was willing to take the highest bidder as long as it was Mike Nunez. That's the key. In your experience, both as an entrepreneur and as an advisor here at Quiet Light, you've seen a lot of businesses that have come up for first, you know, they reach out to us for a valuation. They start thinking about an exit, sometimes the day before they want to exit, sometimes months or you know, a year or so in advance. What do you see being the biggest thing, most consistent thing that those particular entrepreneurs do wrong time and time again that there's just, if there's one thing you could just like shout into the microphone right now to everyone listening, even though some of them are doing it right, what are the majority of folks not doing that that you want them to do to bring more value to their business?
Silence. Question.
Yeah, it was a long one. I kept going rambling on in my sentences because I could see you thinking.
Yeah.
I should have asked a little more.
What's weird about Quiet Light is we actually get so many like great businesses to sell. Like people bring us quality things. So what are some of the bad things people do?
Well, let me just give some stats behind that though, because it's true. What we bring to market, it's great stuff. But the reality is, Chuck, you know, if you look at my numbers, I've closed 105, 106 transactions in 7 years, right? It's not, people say, wow, that's a lot. And people say, wow, that's not very many. But in order to close those transactions, I ballparked the math and I've talked to, you know, 2,500 entrepreneurs. That's 2,500 valuation calls. Your stats are similar. What is that consistent theme that if you could, you know, speak to somebody that someday may sell their business, what should they be doing?
Sure. So when we talk about like specific, like product level things, right? Like when people are just selling random tchotchkes that aren't unique in any way, like those are really difficult to sell. When you have an actual unique product that's got some sort of a brand to it, that's not easily knockoffable, you know, that there's a moat around it, like that makes it so much more desirable to people and so much more valuable. One of the things I also see probably is just P&Ls, having clean P&Ls. Oftentimes people's profit and loss statements are just a complete mess. They'll lump. I don't want to say what I was just thinking about a specific one, but you see people that are just lumping things in because they know they had a cost, but they don't really know when it was or where it was. And they just kind of guesstimate things and put them in the wrong month. So then you'll see like really lumpy P&Ls. And we always try to work with people to like flatten those out and figure out where the real costs are. So that often takes a lot of time to just figure out what the true P&L is on a business. And if we're doing ad backs, what's a real ad back? We fight with people a lot on what's a real ad back versus, you know, something they think they should be adding back.
Yeah, I'm going to just step in, shout out that there's no question. I think that preparing your business for sale is the number one thing that people don't do. They decide to sell, as I say, instead of planning to sell. That means they work their tail off. They launch this business. They work like crazy. Against all odds, they succeed, and it's producing solid revenue and profit for them. And they burn the candle at both ends, and then the candle starts to burn out, and they're emotionally tired, and they're frustrated, and they're exhausted, and they wake up one morning, oh, I'm just not into this. I'm going to sell. I didn't know I could sell, but it just occurred to me. I'm done. I'm calling Chuck Mullins. And at that point, because they're tired, because they're emotionally worn out, they need to sell because trends will go down. They won't do the things that they need to do to keep the business growing and strong and in great shape for somebody else to take over. And so at that point, you know, you get those P&Ls and you're like, yeah, Excel is not really accounting software, you know, ideally QuickBooks and Xero or Xero, one or the other, so that we can run a historical P&L and do year over year trend analysis, look at the metrics. All that is really hard. And then there's the commingling, right? So I'm going to just mention a podcast, not ours, somebody else's, Ecom Crew Podcast 247. Ecom Crew Podcast 247. Chuck, as you know, I sold Mike Jackness's business, Color It, last spring. And Mike is a bright guy. Mike knew exactly what to do, as most people in this audience do. They know what to do. And the mindset that Mike had was simply, I'll get to it someday. What happens is you end up chasing too many rabbits, and that someday comes when you get exhausted. And in his case, he had four brands under one LLC, and three of them were really not sellable at the time that we decided to list the business. So what does that do? You've got four brands all in one LLC, tax returns, commingled, and you're only selling one brand. What does that eliminate?
SBA financing.
SBA financing. Exactly. Is it required to get an SBA loan? No, it's not. To sell a business. Absolutely not. We sold multi-million dollar businesses without an SBA loan. But what it does do is what? It casts a broader net of buyers, right? And even some of those buyers, I've had it. Have you had buyers that have more than enough money to stroke a check for a multi-million dollar business, but they use SBA?
Absolutely. Why not leverage if you can, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So that's, I'd say, number one, I'm in total agreement on the documentation, right? There's, we always talk about it, the risk, growth, transferability, and documentation. Get your numbers right, get those P&Ls in great shape, and it's going to help you learn about your business and set goals. And then that passion may get reignited and you may do more in the business and grow it and have a bigger exit someday down the road. It's not that I don't love it when somebody calls me and says, I'd like a valuation. And part of that is, okay, what's your time frame? When are you ready to sell? And they're like, now. Not that I don't mind that. I love that. If everything's in great shape, it's just tougher to sell it when it's not. They get a lower value, right?
Yep, absolutely. Having those four pillars and the clean books, it makes a big difference.
It really does. It really does. I think I'm in total agreement. Buyers or sellers of businesses, get your documents in great shape. The best way to do that, just call, email, inquiries@quietlightbrokerage.com, chuck@quietlightbrokerage.com. Reach out. It's a service that we provide. I mean, what do we do, Chuck? We help, and then keep helping, right?
Value.
Build the value. It's I've got a mentor that I talked to long and hard about all my business opportunities. And in this particular one, as we chatted about the model and what we do here at Quiet Light, he's like, wow, it just sounds like you're giving away all your knowledge for free in hopes that maybe they'll work with you. I'm like, that's exactly right. We help first, and we're entrepreneurs. So there are times that we wish we got good advice and we were too young to listen, or there's nobody around to talk to about it. And now we share that when it comes to business values and planning an exit. Number one thing you can do, just reach out to somebody. It's free. Talk to Chuck. He's got a ton of experience.
Yeah, I'll tell you, you know, kind of in my entrepreneurial days, if I wasn't going to be an entrepreneur, I always wanted to be a consultant, help other people. And I never had like the actual desire to go out and build a portfolio and charge people to help them grow their business. But, you know, like I said, I've been doing this since 96. I've had so many businesses, do a lot of focus on, optimization and, SEO and just so many things. And one of the things I actually like about is giving unsolicited advice. So when I'm on all these valuation calls, I'm constantly asking people like, oh, have you tried this? Have you thought about this? So even if they're not ready to sell, I'm often giving people advice on how to increase, you know, their business. And even when I do have listings, like I think of one in particular, like I gave him so many ideas and then he did those and the business just kept growing. And it actually came to bite me because the business grew so much that we ended up pulling it off the market after getting multiple full price offers because it just had grown so much and he wanted to just wait a little bit. And we're going to actually getting ready to relist that here soon. So
it's a good problem, right? I mean, I've been in situations, you say it bit you, but ultimately this is a long-term play for us. It's building relationships, and that person, you know, respects and appreciates you obviously because he's coming back.
Yeah, for sure.
Some of your entrepreneurial life experience, and it's benefited them financially, and it's going to grow the business, and ultimately they're going to get a bigger value and tell people about what you did.
Yep.
All right. So that was a little bit more about the sellers and the things that they can do. And number one, I think we both agree, plan that exit, call somebody, email somebody, get a valuation. It's not going to hurt. What about buyers? Biggest mistake that buyers can make?
Disrespecting somebody's business. So getting on a call and like, I'm trying to think of a PC term that I could use that's not a profanity. Just talking smack about somebody's business, trying to negotiate them down in price by like trash talking their business. That doesn't work, at least not at this size business. Maybe it works when you're dealing with a couple $100 million business or something. I don't know. But at these levels, people care about their businesses, at least the ones we sell. People care about it. And when you talk smack, like...
It's personal, even at the 15 to 20 million mark. You know, Mark just closed one just under 15 million. It's owned by an individual. When you're talking about, you know, 100 million, yeah, somebody's up there at the top, but they're shareholders and, you know, CEOs and COOs and all that, and big time attorneys are in there negotiating. It's not you're talking to the guy across the table that actually built it and owns it for the most part. Right.
So he cares about it, right? Like this is their baby.
Yeah.
I mean, you wouldn't believe how many people I've talked to, sellers, that cry on the phone about their business. Like, I mean, it happens a lot. People are deeply invested emotionally in their business. When somebody comes in and disrespects it for no reason other than they're trying to negotiate, like it doesn't go well. You need to be nice. Like that's what Mike does so well. And I don't want to keep talking about Mike, but like
Should we talk about Walker again?
He's about people and he's nice.
Let's talk about Walker again then. Actually, you know, you're absolutely right. I remember being at the Rhodium Weekend Conference before, you know, you were a team on the member, I can't speak, a member of the team here at Quiet Light. And I was up, you know, presenting and talking and, you know, I could swear in that, you know, environment. And, you know, I used the word that begins with an A, ends with an E. Figure it out, folks. Everybody's got one. And what's the secret to being a great buyer? And I said, don't be one. Simple as that. And I could see you out there in the audience shaking your head up and down. And that's exactly right. Mike is very nice, very kind. When I sold my business, I had people that were, you know, well, I remember one in particular ripping my business to shreds on a conference call, initial call. I'm like, why am I even talking to this guy? I'm not selling it to him, even if he gives me an offer over asking. And then strangely enough, the last call, the person that ended up buying my business, first thing he said, thanks for creating such a great site. Your products have helped people exactly like me. By the way, I took stuff like this and I ran the Boston Marathon, actually it was Chicago Marathon last month. And it's because of products like yours. And I was like, cool. It was actually a really short call, 20 minute call. He didn't ask any great questions. I ended up going, well, that was really nice, but I don't think he's buying my business. And he almost, you know, he bought it almost full price offer. So nice.
And I'll tell you what, you just mentioned something that is often overlooked. When you get on these calls, don't just wing it. Do some research, educate yourself before the call, and ask the right questions. It is so important. So many times I get on a call and the seller or the buyer doesn't ask any decent questions and the seller just writes them off and says, you know, let's not take any more calls from that person. They weren't serious. So make sure that you understand the business and you're asking good questions that, you know, like a good buyer would ask, right?
Yeah, they don't have to be the most intelligent questions the seller's ever heard, but that you've done your research and you care. I mean,
yeah,
you, Chuck, you put together a great package. All the great questions are in there. They just have to dig into them and digest them a little bit and ask the same way, ask the same question in their voice and see if you get the same or similar answer from the client on it. I think that's great. I think you're absolutely right. Too many times there've been a few buyers that they're not prepared for it. You can hear them, you know, walking down the street, getting in the car, and it just feels like a complete and utter waste of everyone's time, including the person who's making the call and asking the questions. Okay. Is there anything else before we wrap up? Is there anything else you'd like to say about Walker Dybul?
Visit walkerdybul.guru to check out his new book that's coming out in a couple months.
Let's do this, actually, everybody. Do this too. Go to IMDb and look up Walker Dybul, the actor, and watch some of the movies he's been in. You know, add a review. Let's see if we can boost that one-star rating up to 1.5. In
Robbie Walker. Hot Tomatoes, maybe.
All right, Chuck, you're a good man. I appreciate you coming on. We're wrapping up here with time. Any last thoughts for anybody out there thinking about selling their business or buying one? Any last pearls of wisdom? And I know I didn't prepare you, but any last minute pearls of wisdom before
you? Yeah, you know, I would just say that reach out early. We're not here to be high pressure as far as trying to sign you to sell your business, right? We're here to lead with value. We're going to offer hopefully some wisdom that's going to help you sell that business in the future. So don't think that like, oh, well, I don't want to reach out because I'm not going to sell it for 6 months or a year. Talk to us now. Let us help you get the business in shape to sell it later.
Great advice. That's Chuck Mullins, folks. We will be back in the next podcast. See you soon. Thanks, Chuck.
Bye-bye. Thanks.
Today's podcast was produced by Podcast Motor and the Quiet Light content team. If you have a suggestion for a future podcast, or if you want to guess the quote from the beginning of the show for a chance at getting a shout out on the pod, email us at podcast@quietlightbrokerage.com. Be sure to follow us on Twitter, like us on Facebook, and subscribe to our YouTube channel and this show wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week.